and welcome to the Hear It podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Roberts, and I'll be speaking with guests about the campaigns, insights and ideas to better engage youth audiences. I really hope you like it. This episode, I'm delighted to be welcoming Leon Mann, MBE no less, onto the podcast. Entrepreneur, activist, broadcaster, turned filmmaker who spent his career telling stories throughout the world of sport. He's founder of the independent sports consultancy and production company Refresh Sport, and he's also set up the Black Collective of Media in Sport, better known as BCOMS, as well as the Football Blacklist, an initiative he co-founded in 2009, which highlights the achievements of Black representatives in sport. I could go on, and it's been a little while coming to get you on, but thanks so much for coming on the podcast today.
No, really pleased to be invited on, and apologies for the delay in the logistics, which seems to be a constant battle in my life.
You had the minor thing of the World Cup to attend, so like no shade here, that's fine. Talk to us a little bit about BCOMS and how it's providing opportunities for young aspiring sports journalists.
Yeah, I mean, BCOMS, the Black Collective of Media in Sport, was set up in like 2008, 2009, when a group of us as black sports journalists came together and wanted to find some solutions to some issues around the challenge of a lack of diversity in our industry in sports media. We had lots of different ideas, one of which was raised around working with young people, and I pushed back immediately and said, no. We can't do that because we don't have the expertise. It created a really interesting debate and discussion, and I said that because both of my parents were teachers. They're both retired now. I used to see the strain that they had of, you know, working in that profession. I saw the expertise they had. And while we were a group of well-meaning people who wanted to do good things, I was a little bit nervous that we didn't have the expertise in our ranks at that time. Anyway, fast forward on, you know, probably 7-8 years into the history of BCOMS, and we had an opportunity to do some masterclasses with an organisation called London Sport. And I felt in them partnering with us, they brought the expertise that we didn't have. Through those masterclasses, they were just, you know, so organisation changing, if that's a term, for BCOMS, because it really opened my eyes to the huge opportunity of working with young people and what can be achieved. And essentially what we were doing is we were bringing the expertise within the industry to talented, I'd probably describe as newcomers to the industry, who had podcasts, who were influencers, who were looking for job changes and wanted to get into the media, but there was no clear pathway. So what we did, we created this clear pathway for these masterclasses. In that first cohort, we had Fadumo Aloe, we had Mayo Quadri, we had Arthur Roche, we had Arma Schubel. We had loads of people who've now gone on to do incredibly prominent things within the sports media, who all came from different avenues in terms of working in the industry. You know, that was really the beginning of our work, and that has expanded massively. We now have a masterclass which is sponsored by Nike in the south, and we have a BBC Sport sponsored masterclass which happens in the north. Through working with those young people, those brilliant cohorts of 30 young people in each, we then begin to build out people who are now prepared for the industry, and we help them get jobs and roles, etc. And they help us as BCOMS to understand young people, understand the best way of working with young people, and understand the opportunity for the industry to be working with more young people in the right way. So so we've really moved our work forward in that way.
Yeah, I mean, the conversation about diversity in sports media continues, and we're still seeing a lack of it, particularly within written media. Are there still sort of shifts emerging, or is progress relatively slow?
I mean, progress is relatively slow. However, you know, we've been doing some research work. Holding this up, people who are listening won't be able to see this, but it's a guide that we do every 2 years called the D Word Guide. We have a conference every 2 years bringing together the expertise that exists within the sports media to discuss like what we should be doing as an industry and how we can move forward. We have sessions in that focused on young people. We have young people leading those conversations. And actually our plan is to do, we haven't actually shared this publicly, but to do a conference around young people specifically looking at diversity in the sports media. We plan to do that at some point this year. But what we do is also have some research as part of that. Very basic research. It's not academic research. I don't want to annoy any academics listening to this. But it's basically a head count of who's going to the major tournaments, because for me, that represents, you know, the most important time for a journalist. is when a World Cup comes up or an Olympics comes up or a World Championship. So who's going to those tournaments kind of reflects like what our industry is. Over time, we've noticed that in broadcast, there has been some good progress. There's been good progress specifically around women. So what we identified is initially that was white women and not women of colour. We raised that within our research, and then we saw some good progress with women of colour. And when I say progress, you know, this is all within the context of the industry struggling. So it's not me saying we've nailed it at all, but it's kind of some progress. You know, in terms of when we started this, there weren't even that many former athletes of colour, many former athletes who were women, etc., who were disabled from the LGBT community, who were visible and within broadcast platforms. But now that's changed. That's changed significantly, certainly in terms of pundits. In terms of behind the camera, where we haven't done our research, we know there are massive, massive issues. The industry doesn't push back on us when we say that's the case because they know it is. And we're working with them to try and address those things by finding talent and pushing talent into the right place, and also importantly, making sure talent's supported in the building. But the written media has a massive problem. The written media has not really shifted very much stroke at all in the entire time that BCOMS has been in existence, which is a huge challenge for the industry that they need to take on, and we need to support them with that. You know, we've seen the emergence and greater support of women's sport. So we're seeing more women's sport happening. But while sport is kind of like getting on with some important bits of work there, you know, I think the sports media, in terms of the written side of it, is really dragging its feet in this area. There needs to be some serious interventions to put that right. And that will all come down to leadership. And my belief is if you don't have diversity in your leadership, it will be harder for you to make those interventions because you will not necessarily have an appreciation of the business case for why this makes sense, as well as the way it will kind of enhance inclusion, etc., in your business, which again helps your business. And when we look across the landscape, there's a lack of diversity right across the broadcast senior leadership teams. I can only name you one black person across all of the broadcasters who's at the BBC. All the other broadcasters are really struggling with diversity, certainly from the black community. Other communities are better represented. But the written, you know, we're in big, big trouble, and things need to change significantly.
It has a knock-on effect with content. I spoke with Fadima actually on another podcast I'm involved with, and we were talking about actually without that diversity in the newsroom to discuss stories and debate the narrative, like we're not going to get that richness of story and quality of coverage if the editorial team, the leads are going like, we don't really know how to cover this in the right way.
Absolutely spot on. And this is a business case. You know, if we are trying to sell to younger audiences, we need to understand younger audiences. We need to understand what they want to consume, how they wish to consume it, who they wish to consume it from, you know, all of these kind of different areas. And at the moment, we have groups of people who don't connect with young people. A lot of things I hear in my meetings are, oh, my child was watching this the other day.
My token young person. Oh, don't.
But yeah, based on an experience within a household, based on one particular identity because it's within your household. And it's interesting because their eyes light up when they're talking about things that they have seen, referring to diversity in terms of age diversity, in this case, within their home. When we suggest it's within their workplace, it's kind of like, well, no, it's almost like you're saying, well, I don't have an expertise. It's like, well, you don't. It's like, I'm not an electrician. So if I need to know about that part of electrics in my house, I have no qualms about picking up the phone to an electrician because they know what they're talking about and I will learn and listen from them. And I think there's an arrogance, actually, within the industry from many, I was going to say some, but from many who just want to do things how they've always done things because they know it. And I think they feel a little bit insecure about being vulnerable to not knowing things. But for me, that's really exciting because if I don't know something, it's exciting to learn about something. And surely that's what journalism and storytelling is based on. Tell me something new. They don't recognize that they bring a hell of a lot to the table, but they're never going to bring absolutely everything. So actually, you need to understand what a diverse team does for you and the work that you are doing and leading. Otherwise, you're just going to find yourself on the outside not being relevant, and you know where that ends up. That ends up in a business failing.
What have been some of your biggest learnings from founding BCOMS and particularly through the opportunities with young people in terms of what support really makes a difference, particularly with this backdrop of, you know, they're not seeing this kind of senior roles going to a more diverse community?
It's an interesting one because, I mean, I've learned so much through the BCOMS journey. I think everyone who's been involved in BCOMS has learned a lot because things are changing, right? Along that journey, you have to understand the shifts, the changes of the industry, and also of how you're approaching particular pieces of work. I think, you know, maybe in 2010, if a young person came to me for advice on how do I get into the industry, I would have talked in very kind of linear TV terms, in terms of, well, you've got the BBC, you've got ITV, you know, Channel 4, but they don't do much sport. You know, I would have talked in those terms. Well, now, actually, it's hugely exciting to be able to say, well, look, you've got this whole digital landscape, which actually, you know, is embracing young voices, young people, new ideas, new ways of doing things. That is really, really exciting. And don't worry about joining the BBC, actually, because that is not the mark of success in this industry anymore. Of course, like, you know, if that's your dream and you want to be involved in linear TV or be involved in their digital journey or kind of want to be across particular platforms and programs, go for it and we will help you 100%. But, you know, if you have an ambition to be somebody who works for Copper 90 or ESPN FC or whatever it might be, create your own channel. It's like now people who kind of faced those challenges and that pushback are now earning much, much more money through their own platforms and have complete editorial control over what they're doing. In terms of the learnings, the industry changes, so we have to change. And we have to be ahead of the curve. We have to see what's coming and we have to kind of be prepared for that. And actually, the best people who know what's coming are the young people. During lockdown, my kind of business refresh, it was a very, very difficult time for everyone in the industry. However, I noticed that two people in my team were participating in watch-alongs when the Premier League returned. And it looked really good. They were using something called StreamYard. And I was like, oh, this looked great. And then I thought, right, the industry can do this. So in terms of the things I was joining, it was just like a really bad looking Zoom call and it just looked terrible. It didn't feel like a product that should be associated with, you know, sporting leagues and associations, etc. So we just kind of pitched a few ideas and managed to get some really good business over the line as a result of a young person doing what they do and actually matching that up with this professional world. Unlock something. Well, if I actually didn't have young people in my team or wasn't engaged with young people, I never would have identified that opportunity. And actually, I had no chance of delivering that because I needed them to deliver it because they understood the platform and the best way to get the best out of that platform. I think it's kind of respecting young people is another big part of the journey. I think there's always been a respect for that we've got to listen to everyone as just treating people well, but also, you know, treating people who are underrepresented and not being treated very well by the industry well. And then I guess the third thing is just learning about how you work with people who are newcomers to this industry. You know, if you're going to commit to working with somebody, you have to commit the time and you have to set kind of clear boundaries in terms of when you can help and when you can't help. How I like to manage my time and make it clear what time I have is when a young person or a younger person in the industry comes to me, I normally kind of block out 4 till 6 on a Friday. And just say, at that time, I'm not likely to be writing a pitch deck. At that time, I'm not likely to be kind of involved in a meeting with a senior leader, et cetera, et cetera. So that time is for me to take calls with younger people in the industry who are asking for advice. And what they don't realize until they get on the call, and I tell them this, is you've come to this call grateful for my time. But actually, the time you've given me and the information you've given me about working with younger audiences, what young people want to see, etc., like enriches me so much. Because then when I'm in a meeting with a very senior figure in the industry and they're saying, well, we believe young people want this, this, and this, I'm in an informed position to say, well, actually, I spend time talking to young people quite a lot. And while you have that view, actually, this is what I'm hearing from the people I'm speaking to. So actually, it keeps me relevant within the industry. And I think a lot of people approach mentoring or just helping people out in some small way in the wrong way. It can be a condescending approach and a sense of you should be grateful for my time when actually this is an exchange. It's an exchange of views, an exchange of information, where I walk away and go, wow, I just learned a lot and I've got a great contact. And hopefully they walk away and feel that they've got something from the time that they've spent with me too.
Such a good point. It kind of links to this next question. I speak with a lot of organisations about them wanting to diversify talent and, you know, work with young people in some way, whether that's a youth board or whatever, to inform their work or most likely improve their social media channels. What, in your experience and opinion, makes that good engagement?
Everything we do has to be anchored in respect and clear communication and transparency, because I think without that, you get into a space where people are unsure and can feel like they're in a grey space. And I think for a young person not understanding the landscape as well as someone who's more experienced, that can be a real difficult place to be, where actually people have a bad experience and disappear. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I've seen that over the years, where a young person's come into a workplace and they've not understood certain things, they've not had confidence to go to particular people to kind of get clarity and transparency, and as a result they've kind of disappeared. We lost someone who could have been brilliant, you know. So for me, it is about kind of being clear. I do get a lot of questions about, I'm being asked to help with this and this, do you think I should be being paid? And, you know, the answer to that question is 9 times out of 10, well, yes, I do think there should be transparency about that. Are they using this for their product to sell something? And if that's kind of selling the PR, the image of an organization, you know, that's got a value to it. But also, you know, be respectful, have an understanding of where you are on your journey, but, you know your value. I think people are in such a rush to get things done. They're so busy that they actually don't have much time to stop and think. They don't have time to stop and think about the support a young person needs, or the fact that they should be paying them, the fact that it's important to challenge their line manager to get the funding to be able to pay the young person for their expertise that they're delivering. For me, I think there's a number of things to consider, but it's all anchored in this ability to kind of communicate transparently with clarity and to understand the value that people bring to your organisation or your business. And I think it's easy, because there are many young people out there who will happily work for nothing. Some people, young people, are in a position in life where they are able to work for nothing.
Like, I saw a youth internship not long ago, and it was 6 months unpaid. It's not even the company going, yeah, but we've not got budget. It's, you are putting barriers in place for a group of young people. And I think that's the card you have to play to go, actually, are we excluding people by doing it in this way?
Exactly. And look, you know, this was the industry norm. And then I think we've started to have those conversations about people who just could not take those opportunities because they had to go and do paid work to support their family with, you know, rent or a mortgage or whatever it might be. And that meant that that really talented person who you really liked, who really wanted to come in and do something and had great potential to go on to have a paid position within your workplace, just goes, and we lose someone again. Certainly there's no excuse for the bigger businesses in the industry to not be paying for internships. The smaller businesses, I just think, just need to think about it some more, just need to think about how fair it is. And certainly I always say to young people, look, if you're considering doing it, just make sure it doesn't cost you any money. It must not cost you money to be able to travel and to have any kind of expense. And actually, you also should kind of have a period of time set out if you're going to do it on those terms. So there's a review period where you can just say, look at all the things I've done it for free, and you've paid my expenses, and we need to kind of talk about, is there a way to be paid now, because I've proven what I bring to the business. I mean, with BCOMs, I mean, we're constantly having these conversations because people want young people, they don't really have a budget, and then it's like, well, you know, we for transparency, we'll put opportunities to young people, but we're excluding people from opportunities here. It doesn't fit the ethics of our organisation at all. So more often than not, some money is found to make sure that it's covered. And we would never, ever, you know, have anyone working without having expenses covered, unless they just insisted and just said, I respect what you're saying, but I really want to go and do this with this company. Then that's a personal decision that, you know, we would leave people to. But we'd make it very clear to the partner that we don't feel that's on.
Talk us a little bit about how the media landscape is kind of shifting with that young audience in mind.
I think it's really interesting in terms of the BBC Sport showing up on TikTok, and then their exploration of how they get that right. How does that work? Really good young people in there. You know, with all of this, right, in terms of this digital first approach, etc., if you have the people from 30 years ago were still leading these conversations because that's their expertise in linear TV or whatever it might be. If they haven't done the learning, if they haven't kind of put themselves in a vulnerable position to go, I'm a leader, but I don't know everything, then you're going to be in big trouble. Then you're going to be in big trouble because they're the people that are leading the budgets. Those are people that are leading the decisions. Those are the people that are leading the recruitment in terms of, like, what does our business look and sound like? Who are we? What's our identity? How do we connect with audiences? Who are we using on screen? Who's producing this? Who's making this? What platforms are we on? You know, if you're still dealing with people who haven't done the work, because it's not to say you can't be in this industry for 30 years and not be completely relevant and on point right now, because I think you can if you've kind of done the learning, done the work, been vulnerable to not knowing everything and listen to people. The best leaders I work with will really listen. They'll listen and they'll ask curious questions. They have curiosity in terms of, so how would that work? And you can just see they're just thinking really deeply about the things you're saying. They're showing you respect. They're not waiting for their turn to speak. They're literally kind of like soaking it all in and, you know, going away, thinking about things, and then putting people who are in a better position than them and more prepared and more connected with things to go about and do things. The people who are leading need to kind of have a good understanding of what they can and can't do, and also review what their teams look like, because often it's a group of very similar people who've been taken on, who are just kind of confirming to each other what they don't know and just kind of like avoiding any kind of interaction with things until it becomes a business situation where they're completely missing out and their rival is streets ahead, kind of absolutely smashing it.
It's having that structured approach. I mean, I hear this phrase at the moment, I hate it, but it's like the Z-suite. But the concept of it around having a youth board or that youth panel to test stuff, I think, well, yeah, why wouldn't you have a structured approach for all of that? Like, yeah, for underrepresented groups, for young people, if that's important to you, surely you do it in that kind of way.
Absolutely. And then I believe the model should be, you know, at least two of those representatives sit on the senior leadership team as part of, you know, just feeding in across every part of the business, because, you know, that's how you truly kind of build things in. And that's how actually there's an exchange of understanding, okay, well, these are the commercial targets that we're kind of aiming for. How do we do that? And it might not feel like a young person conversation or a young audience conversation, but it absolutely is, because it's kind of like, how are we selling to young people? You know, it sounds crass. How are we selling to young people? Someone tell me. Oh, yeah, well, we're going to get a Snapchat channel. Okay, brilliant. That's it. Fantastic. We'll put all of our linear content onto a channel that kind of, it doesn't work, right? How are we going to repurpose this? Repurpose, reformat, why would we do that? You know, those are the conversations that were taking place 7, 8, 9 years ago. Taken people getting it so wrong along the journey to get to that place. And so imagine if we actually had people who had expertise, understanding, connection with those audiences and how they're communicating at that point, we would have saved a lot more time. I always think, diversity, you know, is about diversity of thought. So actually, it's a very healthy thing for somebody to go, I'm not sure, have we thought about this? Because it just makes you be more thorough about the thing that you're presenting yourself.
Any books, articles, talks, films, or whatever we should keep an eye out for that really helps understand some of the things we've talked about today?
The last book I read is a book called Week One Summer, and it's by a gentleman called Floyd Steadman. So Floyd Steadman was one of the first black rugby players in this country and one of the first black head teachers of a private school. Really interesting guy, has got an incredible story, being in care as a young man. He talks about being homeless as a young man, and he talks about how he kind of still managed to go on and kind of have a very, very successful life, become a pioneer in rugby, a pioneer in education. I've got Ego is the Enemy, by Ryan Holiday, which I've kind of found a really interesting read. It's kind of a self-help book, and I believe ego is the enemy, and it's really difficult to kind of navigate your own ego sometimes, and it can prevent us making good decisions. Final one, which I haven't read, and I'm looking forward to reading, is Real Wins by Michelle Moore, a good friend of mine, a leadership consultant who is doing some really excellent work in the sport industry and beyond.
Hey, thank you. And just finally, what's the one stereotype about young people that you think should get in the bin?
There are so many. They're deeply frustrating, and I hope I don't in any way kind of lean into them, because sometimes you don't realize you're doing it. But I think it's trust is the big thing. Like, we don't trust young people because they haven't lived for 50 years. Young people are incredibly trustworthy. Young people often need support because they don't have some experience, but you don't need 10, 20, 30, 40 years, 5 years, 2 years experience to be able to trust somebody with the expertise that they clearly have. And I think sometimes we miss the huge potential that we have in pushing our businesses and industries forward by not trusting young people earlier.
That's brilliant. Thank you for that. Thanks for coming on as well today.
No, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Hear It podcast. If you like what you heard, please rate, review and subscribe, as it really helps others find us. You can also follow us on Twitter @HearItPodcast or drop us a message by emailing info@threadandfable.com.